talking all about the city of brotherly love. Uh-huh. Sit back and eat a Philadelphia cheesesteak. Oh, yummy.
Welcome to Type Tune Tent. I'm Tom Kranz.
Philadelphia's got a lot of nice neighborhoods.
Yes, it does. And my guest today grew up in one of those neighborhoods, not far from my own. Charles Wiedemann spent the first 18 years of his life in the part of Northeast Philly called Lawndale, and has written a book of nostalgic anecdotes from those days called Lawndale. Our chat covers not only some local history, but Charles' own lifetime of creativity, starting as a musician and then a prolific writer and blogger. Spend a few minutes with us as we turn the clock back to what was arguably a much simpler time. And I'm joined right now by Charles Wiedemann, the author of Lawndale, a book named after my old neighborhood. Well, my old neighborhood is one half neighborhood away from Lawndale. I used to live in a neighborhood called Lawn Crest, which is blocks south of Lawndale. And when I saw that this book was written and I saw the title Lawndale and a row house on the front, I said, man, I got to know more about this. So Charles is with me now from his home in Philadelphia. And how are you today, Charles?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm doing
good,
well.
Good. This is great. So we have to do this interview keeping in mind two audiences. Audience number one is going to be our contemporaries who still live in Lawn Crest. And, you know, I belong to the Lawn Crest Facebook group, so there's a lot of them out there. And then we also have to keep in mind the larger audience that couldn't care less about Lawndale, Lawn Crest, Philadelphia, or us. So, and I think there are enough bigger issues that we can talk about that kind of spawned, you know, ideas in my brain upon reading your book, which I just finished this morning. Tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are and where you came from.
Well, you know, grew up in Lawndale at McGee and between Hasbrook and Oakley Street through the 60s and 70s. Went to Lawndale School. And then went to Fells and then Frankfurt. After that, I was a musician in the late 70s and early 80s. So I went to Los Angeles and played music. And I played in a band in Philly and I played in a band in Wildwood before that. And came back after a few years where we, you know, did make it big as rock stars. Went into retail for a while and then went into banking, like my father, and worked in banking for 20 years. In retail banking, everything from loans to branch management into brokerage and things like that. Was a consultant near the end there. And then was in New York and then came back to Philadelphia and worked at the Philadelphia Inquirer at philly.com selling digital advertising for about 10 years. And then just decided, you know, I was tired of corporate life and just wanted to kind of write and create something, even though I wasn't doing music at that point. Again, I just wanted to write. And I started writing a blog called Fickle Philly with a PH, just about, you know, my stories and life back in Philadelphia. I started that around 2016 and, you know, kind of just been working in jobs, feeling kind of semi-retired, don't want to be in corporate anymore, kind of just want to work and live a quiet, peaceful life here in Rittenhouse in Philadelphia and just, you know, write my books and just, you know, do my blog. So
And you've written quite a few books, right?
Yeah, Lawndale's actually number seven, surprisingly enough. And my best, my most popular to date. My sister Jane said to me when she read some little stories I did from my past in my blog during COVID, because I didn't have any thing to write about because nothing was happening because of the lockdown for a year and a half. So I kind of turned inward and so did my daughter because we were locked in here. She worked on her music and I just started to write some stories from my past and they were wildly popular. And my sister Jane read them and said, Chaz, this is your superpower. You know, you write about dating and relationships and music, that stuff, but you writing about the past and, you know, your childhood and growing up, I think that is your superpower. So I believe and trust in her words and, you know, everybody needs a good guidance. And so I decided I was going to do Lawndale and then Wildwood after that. So,
yeah. Cool. So yeah, you've been involved in creative pursuits pretty much your whole life. You were a musician and you played in bands and now you're writing. Where do you think that came from?
I think it came from my mother's side of the family. Her brothers were all musicians, and I think that's where it came from. Even though my uncle worked in the record industry for many years, he's a great sales business guy. My father's worked in banking his whole life. My dad dabbled in some filmmaking and some writing himself, but you know, he had four kids to raise and a mortgage to pay, and he had a very responsible life. But my artistic life came very young. I just liked to play with clay and draw pictures and draw comic books. And I just had this artistic feeling. I was always playing air guitar in front of the record player, you know, and I loved, you know, the Beatles and Steppenwolf and Aerosmith and rock and roll. And I just always like loved the arts. I have to create. There's just something in me that has to be making something. And you get sidetracked for years working in corporate, you know, wearing a suit and tie and doing deals and everything. But if you can kind of slow down and at least try to keep that in your life, that's important. And it comes forth if you let it.
You know? And were you able to do that as a banker? Were you able to pursue either music or writing at the same time? I know firsthand from having a day job, by the time you get home, sometimes the last thing you want to do is make your brain work even harder. But were you able to do that while you were, you know, had a day job, as it were?
You're correct, Tom. Yeah. When you're done, you know, and I have a daughter I was raising. So yeah, you're just kind of tired. It takes a lot out of you. You know, you get the salary and that kind of puts you in the little prison of life, but it has to be done. I just felt that, I think in the 90s, I started to write Angel with a Broken Wing, which is my first work of fiction, which was published two or three years ago. I started writing that about a guy who was kind of sick of his life in finance and wanted to run away from his life. So, you know, we draw from ourselves around. And I kind of had just a rough kind of draft of that and shelved it, and then followed it up with, you know, a kind of a treatment for a kind of a detective story about a couple of guys that were friends that were brokers and decided to be detectives because they were good at profiling people. So a lot of that mirrored my life, but, there was a lot of, you know, it was kind of unfinished, and it was just something that I kind of was needing to do, but not really having the time to do. But later in my life, in my late 50s, I realized I had to do something. So I started writing the blog, and I thought, how am I going to write a post every week? How am I going to do that? And it just started to pick up steam, and people started to follow it, and, you know, just hundreds of thousands of page views and subscribers. So,
well, that's awesome.
That caught on. Yeah. And then that gave me the platform to say, all right, well, let's do a Fickle Philly book about the guy that comes from New York and wants to find, you know, love in Philadelphia. And there was a follow up to that and some other things. But then once they were done, we got to COVID. I went, I'm really going to put out Angel with a Broken Wing, my first work of fiction, which I really love. And then follow that up with the next one. But you know, that itch was still there that I really wanted to tell these stories, because when I would drop the links of some of those kind of stories about Lawndale and Wildwood in my blog and put them in the Facebook groups, the folks that were in those groups really went wild over them. And I thought, these should be books.
Well, so for the Lawndale, Northeast Philadelphia crowd that's listening, or hopefully they're listening, a couple specifics here now. So you grew up around Oakley and McGee, which is very close to the border of Cheltenham Township, which is the next kind of Montgomery County suburb, just north and slightly west.
Right across the track.
Correct. Literally across the tracks and across the Tookany Creek.
Yes.
I grew up on Brill Street, which was a little street that was near Tabor and Godfrey. I used to tell people I lived behind Sears on the Boulevard when Sears on the Boulevard was there. Yeah. So we actually, and Lawndale is the bigger of the two neighborhoods. My neighborhood, Crescentville, is just south of Lawndale. And a lot of people have kind of combined the two now into Lawncrest. My part of town is called Lawncrest. Your old part of town is still called Lawndale. And, you know, some of my memories from my kid include the big 4th of July parade that they used to have. And when the Lawndale Recreation Center, you know, would open up for the July 4th, and there was all kinds of stuff going on there. But you talk, and you know, there are hundreds of reminiscences you have in your book, which is really a throwback for for me, but also for people who remember, I guess, a simpler time. I guess I hate to use that cliche, but that really is what it comes down to. And you talk about some of the games that as kids we played when there was no such thing as smartphones. There was no internet. There was no Facebook. There was no walking around with your phone. You had to like make shit up based on what you had. Like we had in my driveway had a telephone cable across that ran across the two rows of homes. It was about 20 feet up. We would hit it with a ball, and that was called wire ball. And if you hit the wire ball, that was a home run, right? And then my front steps, my row homes, all the row homes on my street were accessed through two levels of steps, like five steps and then another five steps. We would bounce the ball against the steps. And if you could make the ball go across the street, that was a home run. And if not, it was a single. So that was step ball. And so we found all these little stupid games with basically what we had.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, wiffle ball, you know, if somebody had some hockey sticks with the plastic, you know, blade and the puck that would go down the sewer, the littlest guy was hung by his feet and they'd get the puck out. They played wiffle ball and, you know, just red light, green light and Mother May I and, you know, hide and go seek and just all that sort of stuff. You just played in the street and riding your bikes and, you know, just traveling around back in the woods and Tookany Creek and building forts back there. And yeah, we like to be outside, you know, in the sunshine and just creating our own kind of fun. And
yeah,
you know, as long as we're home, by the time the streetlights came on, you know, you had to come in. But if you made it all you had to do was make it home by dinner. And during the day, you were just miles away. Your parents had no idea where you were. You could have been killed, and they wouldn't have found out for a couple of days, man.
Exactly.
You know? But everyone did it. You were just gone. And we would go really far away. You knew if you had ridden your bike for a few hours, you probably should turn back because the sun's starting to go down and we got to start heading back. And you would just find your way back to your neighborhood.
Yeah, you know, it seemed between playing and traveling blocks away. And then, like, when I went to – you went to Lawndale Elementary. I went to Franklin Elementary, which is south on Rising Sun Avenue. But, you know, I walked to school from first grade all the way to sixth grade. And then I walked to junior high, which was Creighton up Tabor Road. And, you know, between walking to school and then, you know, riding our bikes, God knows where, I don't see that happening today. You know, if everybody's so scared of their kids and, you know, with good reason, you know, there's a lot of creeps out there and people are, I think they're much more protective of their kids than our generation was because there wasn't as much to worry about back in those days, or maybe there was, and our parents just didn't. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that, I mean, the neighborhood we grew up in was one of the best in the city, and it was relatively and a quiet little classic 60s, 70s suburban existence. But yeah, it was just a safer time. I mean, you know, we'd run into a couple of people, but nothing that much to speak of. I think maybe the world was just simpler and safer, as you said, Tom.
More with Charles Wiedemann in just a moment.
The Earth is dying a slow death. The 5,000 people living on the moon are in trouble. Their paradise has become a cautionary tale of human weakness. We need a hero. Enter Rick Mack and the Planetary Commission to save the Earth, the Moon, and themselves. Moon Rescue, Escape from the Dome by Tom Krantz. Now available in ebook, paperback, hardback, and audiobook.
All right, so a couple things jumped out at me. First of all, you write in one chapter about what a pain in the ass you were in fifth grade. You were smart and you like were pretty active, but it seems like you and your fifth grade teacher were not exactly simpatico. And that's exactly my story. My fifth grade teacher was named Miss Hawkins, and I couldn't help just constantly laughing and talking out loud. And she would actually grab me and take me outside the classroom a couple times and give me a talking to in the hallway. What is it about fifth grade, man? I don't know. Something in the water there, maybe.
I think boys turning, what are you in fifth grade? You're like 9 or 10?
Yeah, something like that.
It's beginning to happen, I think. you're a little bigger and you're just almost right there at the edge of about what's about to happen to you, the explosion of puberty. And, you know, my father always said, school didn't challenge you, son. He didn't fully understand me because I was kind of alien to him, where, you know, your other kids kind of follow along. My older sister, Jane, was a straight A student and just, you know, great at school and all those sorts of things and well done. Me, you know, I was the creative kid. I liked comic books and being with my friends and playing with clay and making stuff and just being out and comedy and music. And school bored me. It just felt like prison. All of it felt like prison. I mean, there were good times in school. I made a lot of great friends and I've had some wonderful times in school, but I never liked it. I never wanted to go there. I would have been fine if I could have just been homeschooled and just let me go like master my instrument and draw pictures, for goodness sakes.
You know? Yeah, you seemed like you had a lot of creativity and the need to kind of do stuff and, you know, be places other than school. I totally get that. Another thing that I just wanted to jump on, there's no big discussion here, but you wrote at one point when you got your braces on, just like me, the dentist pulled 4 perfectly good teeth out of my mouth to make room for those braces. And in those days, so I was 11, 12, going on 13, they were the big metal bands and I had rubber bands. And it was like, this was like, you know, so now I'm going into 9th grade, which is like bad enough as it is with a mouthful of braces and rubber bands. And I just said, wow, that just brought that back to me just so vividly.
Yeah. 9th grade was the worst year of my life. I mean, I was basically just a target.
Point blank, when I was a 9th grader, I was a loser. That's an exact quote from that chapter. And that's exactly what I was. I was overweight. I always came in last when we had to do the half mile run around the school. It was like, why do I even get out of bed? You know?
Yeah. You're just depressed and anxious and you're at the age where you love girls and they're all so pretty and they look at you like you are a leper. You know, it's awful, awful. And I'm not a good student. I'm like a bright kid who's basically like flunking out of Spanish. And I'm like, what do I need algebra for? This is useless to me. I don't want to be here. I don't like the teachers. I'm bullied. Yeah, it was an absolutely horrific existence. Yeah. Although there are people in this world that have had horrific existences, but you know, I mean, mine was just, you know, being tortured as a youth, but
yeah, mine wasn't that bad, but I went to Central, which was all boys at the time. Yeah. I never got, why do we have to have an all boys existence in our teens? You know, that's like the worst time because you're already stigmatized. You got these teachers, these old world teachers who treat you like a child and who think they need to be rough and macho and, I don't know. When I was a teenager, I listened to all the same bands you did. I was very much into The Who. I was into Black Sabbath, you know, all the kind of metal-y bands. But I had to listen in my basement because my father hated my music. My father was an old world German guy who liked the Glenn Miller Orchestra and he listened to a lot of classical music. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's good.
He just hated my music. So I spent a lot of time in my basement by myself between my two speakers. And that's what some of my most vivid memories are of listening to that first Black Sabbath album and, you know, Tommy and memorizing all the words. And it's like amazing how music then becomes associated with your life for like the rest of your life. Like I can hear certain songs and I'm instantly transported to that crappy chair in my basement.
Yeah. I think the difference there is surprisingly, my father loved music. He loved classical music and opera and would be down the basement smoking a cigar, reading his books, listening to Beethoven 9th. But he also had some younger friends and turned me on to Inagata De Vita, Iron Butterfly, the soundtrack to Easy Rider on 8-track in the 69 VW minibus. And when I heard Born to Be Wild, I was like, that is the type of music I want to make. He had Tommy the Who and we would listen to that. And it was, yeah. But, you know, my mom liked the Beatles and, you know, a lot of the crooners and things like that. But she loved Beatles were always present in our house ever. I was a baby.
So. No, I would have loved that. You know, they would sit through and suffer through the Ed Sullivan Show and watch that stuff. But my mother later on had a penchant for Elvis, which was like, God bless you. Okay, no problem. And my dad was still not on board. I wanted to, before I forget, I wanted to talk about one more thing that is a constant a constant theme in your book, which is railroad tracks. You call it back the tracks, which is Philly speak for back by the train tracks, right? You were back the tracks. And we had probably that same rail line runs through my neighborhood behind what used to be the Bond Bread Factory. And it used to be, you know, back there. There's something dangerous about train tracks, right? I was only back there maybe twice. And the one time I was back there, this gang of kids came through and they were smoking. And one of them had a little bottle of Southern Comfort and they were basically not even 15, right? And I'm back there with me and my stupid friends and we're scared to death of these guys. And so that's what I associated with being back the tracks, you know. But you spend a lot of time, you know, flirting with death with the trains, I guess, pretty much, right?
Yeah, we lived back there. That was our world. That belonged to us, the tracks. I think there's something about it where wouldn't it be great to be able to jump on in a freight car, you know, and just go straight up to New York? Because my mom goes, that line goes to New York. And I thought, oh, it'd be great if we could just be like Boxcar Willie, you know, and a couple of hobos and just jump on it. Because we like to go on these journeys when we would just walk forever or ride our bikes. It'd be cool to just jump on a train. But, you know, the first line was the freight line. And, you know, when you'd be back there throwing stones or, you know, doing whatever you were doing and you heard that rumble, somebody would holler train and that monster would come along pulling 100 cars behind it and everything would stop. And you'd see the rails actually up and down and the ties and the stones move. And we all just stood by and watched this massive, powerful beast just roll by like a dinosaur.
Yeah, something large. It's like larger than life. This it's like an entity with all that noise and the power going over the tracks like that. Yeah, I know. The train tracks always scared the hell out of me. And then you also lived very close to Tuckanee Creek, which, you know, where I live, it's Tuckanee Creek, which is part of a creek that actually runs through a portion of Frankfort and Northeast Philadelphia.
Correct.
And you were within, I mean, you could walk to the creek from where you were, right? And I'm sure you did.
I could be at the water in 15 minutes.
Yeah. And at those days, I think the creek was actually clean. Not now anymore.
We did drink from it a couple of times. You know, you're just thirsty and you just find a calm spot and go, there's no bugs in this. And you just drink it. Yeah.
Yeah. Those days are gone also. My dad for a long time was a member of a group called the Friends of Tuckanee Creek Park. They would clean up the creek because where I lived back on Newtown Avenue behind Bond Bread, it's like a park and people would come on the weekends and they would leave their baby diapers there. They would leave cases of beer. I mean, it was really kind of sad because it was a nice little spot. Let me ask you before, let's get some business out of the way here. So Lawndale is available on Amazon, right?
Yes, sir.
And where can we find your other books? Are they on Amazon as well? Or do we have to go to a website or what's the story?
You simply type in my name, Charles Wiedenman, into Amazon and all of my books will come up.
All of them. Okay, that's great.
They're all together.
And are you working on something now?
I'm working on a book called, I'm going to call it Down the Shore. I was thinking, you know, we have Lawndale, we'll make Wildwood. But I wanted to call it Down the Shore because being from Philly, everybody goes, you know, what are you doing? We're going down the shore. We're going to get some tomatoes. Go down the shore. You know, a Philly accent. Yeah, we're from Willow Grove. So you go down the shore and get the Jersey tomatoes. So I thought down the shore because not everybody got to go down the shore on our shore, but we had a little house in Wildwood. And when we were out of school, we all piled in the car and went down there for the summer. And it was absolutely glorious. And
of course,
I think I'm going to like the Wildwood book better than the Lawndale book, only because Lawndale, you know, is kind of adolescence and growing up and there's beautiful moments in it. But Wildwood is summer. And summer is no school. And you know how we feel about school. So you're free to just let that explode and explore in that beautiful. And those stories just unfold on that sandy stage that are absolutely life-changing and unforgettable.
Well, I will look forward to that book when it comes out. And maybe we'll have another chat about that. You're going to have to find a way, however, to build that Philly accent into your titles and into your book. You have a glossary at the end of Lawndale, which is very helpful, but you really have to mangle the language a lot more, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think the glossary just popped into my head one night when I was editing Lawndale, and I went, well, how cool would it be if I could just put that little extra thing in it in at the back end of the book, just to give anyone not from Philly that kind of vibe and like how we say everything. Some of them, I mean, the word John has become very popular and was never used when you and I were kids, Tom. But John, I think, rose up somewhere in the 90s or something. But that's a big one everybody uses now. But I tried to think of all the things that we would say and what people, you know, use in Philly. So.
Well, real quick, I'll just go to two of the most common ones, right? The word water, W-A-T-E-R, you know, give me a glass of water. You pronounce it water, W-O-O-D-E-R. And that's absolutely correct. Give me some water. Let's go in the water, you know? And if you don't like it, go away. And then, of course, Philadelphia's favorite football team, the Eagles, which in Philadelphia is the Eagles, I-G-G-L-E-S. And some people like to really hit that Eagles a little bit more than other people. But that's just a hint. Listen, Charles, I really appreciate the fact that you could take some time and talk here. I'm going to look forward to your next book. And, hey, thanks so much for joining us. And keep on rocking, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you. You too, Tom.
Yeah. A lot of sports fans in Philly, they get mad when the team loses. Santa Claus runs on the field and they say, boo.